Welcome to Career Tools. How to Softly Use Acceptance Criteria, Part 1. This cast answers these questions. How do I make sure I deliver work assignments that meet the required standards? How do I get the information I need to get results with work assignments? How do I analyze work assignments for standards if they're not given? Not that that ever happens. Well, if you want answers to these questions and more, keep listening. Here we go.
Hey folks, there's lots of activity ensuing in most of our lives now until the end of the year. One thing to ask yourself is, are you prepared to kick off 2020 in the right direction with the right focus on what you need to do for your organization? If you've listened to our guidance for any length of time, you'll have heard us talk about David Allen and his book, Getting Things Done. Don't leave forming a plan for your organization, teams, or directs as an open loop. Bucket that task or project in such a way where you can action it quickly. Maggie is working most days in December because she just wants to be there for you and is happy to share with you how manager tools can help. We have many ways to get our guidance into the hands of your workforce, from client onsites, training, video course options, bulk license purchase, or getting you trained on how to deliver our training internally within your own organization. We're here to help. Contact Maggie on maggie@manager-tools.com or customerservice@manager-tools.com. Customer service is all one word. I'm glad you're here, Mike, because we're going to talk about acceptance criteria, and the people that started acceptance criteria were IT. And now you run a business, but you used to be IT. I still think of you as IT. Acceptance criteria is a concept that can be used pretty much with any work assignment, any work that you're given, whether from your boss or your customer or just that you make up yourself, any work can have acceptance criteria. And whilst the concept is a good one, it can be corrupted pretty easily and get you into trouble. Using it in a negative way will be seriously detrimental to your relationships. And if you've listened to Career Tools for more than about 5 minutes, you know that relationships are at least half of your career, results and relationships. And so we want to help you protect your relationships, as well as use the concept of acceptance criteria to make sure that your work is up to standard. So we're going to talk about the best way to use it and how to avoid the pitfalls. So we're going to start with a caveat. Then we're going to talk about getting acceptance criteria. Then we're going to talk about using acceptance criteria as a checklist. And then don't be pedantic, which is probably another caveat.
Is that the relationship piece of things?
That's pretty much the relationship piece.
Okay. So before even telling what to do, we're going to start off with a caveat.
Yeah. Don't use this badly. No. So when you get a work assignment, there's a few things you need to know from we'll assume it's from your boss, but it could be the business or another part of the business. It could be a customer. It could be pretty much anyone. And there's things that you need to know in order to deliver the assignment. They're the sort of attributes of the solution, as it were. And those are the things that we call acceptance criteria. And many people don't want to ask questions. And we're going to tell you that you should ask questions in a limited way and being careful for the tolerance limit of the person who's giving you the work. The classic example of someone who doesn't want to ask questions is someone who's a new hire, and everyone says, ask questions, ask all the questions you like. My trick is to tell new hires they have 20 questions a day and they roll over. So by the end of week one, they've got 80 over, so they can ask as many as they want.
But you don't want to sound like a child in the back seat of the car. When are we going to be there? When are we getting there?
Yeah.
What about this? Why is that green? Why is that blue?
Tell me that again.
Yeah.
But what people think is that questions imply a lack of knowledge, so that they're saying, I don't know this thing. But executives, people who are really successful, know that questions are not about what you don't know. Well, they are about what you don't know, but they're a request for more knowledge. They're not saying, I'm lacking in knowledge. I don't know anything about this subject. They're saying, I know what I know, and I want to know more. That's why salespeople ask lots of questions, because they want to give you the best product for your needs. And that means asking questions about what your needs are. It's not that they don't have any knowledge about their product. It's that they need to have more knowledge about you to make the product fit with your needs. So if you think of it that way, asking questions is not a bad thing, or not the bad thing that a lot of people think it is.
Yeah, as an example, I had a conversation recently with my brother-in-law, who's in sales, and we were walking through this exact thing about asking questions. And he's telling me how many people in sales, they're trying to sell something, they get some pushback, and they immediately go to discounting the price, which, of course, if you're the business owner, right, or the executive, you're not, that's not great. That's not a great way to do it. And he's found that the vast majority of time, it's not the price. But as soon as somebody makes this, like, they bit into a bitter lemon, you know, face, salespeople go into cutting price and not good. So his answer to that is just ask questions and you until you find out what the real problem is. Don't solve the price problem until you find out that's really the problem.
Yeah. When I bought my house, I was like iffy about it. And I said, okay, if you can make the closing the 1st of March rather than the 1st of February, I'll buy the house. Like, it was the timing, not the money, that made a difference to me. And they found that out because they asked questions.
There you go.
So let's go back to acceptance criteria. So we're going to give you a simple example of a work assignment and what the acceptance criteria might be. So let's say you're asked to find flights for your boss from San Francisco to New York. If he says, go find me some flights, you need to know what day that person wants to leave and you want to know when they come back, right? That's obvious. You can't book flights unless you know what the dates are. But in order to find the right flights first time, you actually need a bunch of information, like what times does he like to fly and when does he need to arrive? What class of service does he want? How much he's prepared to pay for a ticket? Now, if your boss was really smart and he gave you the assignment with acceptance criteria, it might sound like, find me a flight from San Francisco to New York, return, leaving on the 5th of December and returning on the 15th. I need to be in our New York office by 3 p.m. on the 5th. I don't want to leave on the return any earlier than 10 a.m. I want to go first class, but I don't want to pay more than $2,000 for the ticket. I would prefer American, but I'll fly with another carrier if I could get first class for less than $2,000. So there's a whole bunch of extra information around that task that you may or may not get. And if all you know is that he wants to fly out on the 5th and return on the 15th, you can come back to him with a flight that leaves on the 5th but doesn't get him in by 3 p.m. and then you failed the assignment. It's a really simple example of people who ask you to do things have something in their head, but they don't necessarily tell you what those things are. And then you come back to them and you're like, here it is. And they say, no, because it doesn't get me in by 3 p.m. And you think, you never said that.
Well, that's right. That's the caveat, which is, you said, you know, a great boss or detailed boss would give you all that information. But those of you who've been around more than a day know that's generally not the way it works, right? And here's the key. You can't use the lack of that information to blame your boss for the outcome, for your failure.
You can, but don't say it out loud because that will quickly get you in hot water.
Yeah, it's not fair, you know, so... okay, that's all right.
So many things aren't. It's not fair, but it's also, you know, you'll get the answer, like, well, I wanted you to think about it, or you should have thought about that, or I don't have time to think about the details. You should have thought it through.
The way I think about it sometimes is validating my assumptions, right? Mm-hmm. In order to make that return, you had to make, well, maybe in maybe some case you didn't even think about it, which is bad, but otherwise you have to make a bunch of assumptions. And so... usually assumptions get you in trouble. That's been my experience.
Yes, usually. So we'll go back a bit and explain some of the history of acceptance criteria, because that might help explain some of the stuff we come to next. As long as, you know, we're going to be careful about using them and not use the lack of information against our bosses, because that's bad. It's just bad for our relationships. So IT organizations first used acceptance criteria as a way of having the business be more precise about what they wanted, and also to provide a checklist at the end of the project. So the theory is, if there's a clear checklist of the points that are required for the solution, it would be easy to agree that a project delivered on what was asked for. Before that, everyone said, I want a thing, and IT produced a thing, and then the business said, no, that's not the thing I wanted.
I've never done that.
Everybody was really annoyed.
I've never done that. Never, ever. Now, of course, right?
Yeah. So, you know, the business would say, I want to record the date of an event. And IT would say, okay. And they'd make a space for dates. And when the business started using whatever it was, they say, no, no, we need a space for the name and the dates have to be sometimes over a number of days and we need the location too. And they didn't say any of that. So IT ends up doing a lot of rework. The business is frustrated. IT is frustrated. And, you know,
costs
things
a lot of
aren't
money
going and, well. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So IT has a lot of high C's. So they came up with a plan that this wasn't going to happen anymore. They're going to have acceptance criteria, a clearly defined list. And if the solution delivers what's on the list, then it has to be accepted by the business. They have no choice. It's exactly what you asked for.
Yeah, that works well.
Yeah. So IT are like, okay, here, this is what you asked for. And this is where the solution delivers it. And they expected no pushback whatsoever. And things still went horribly wrong. So the business would say, yes, that's what we asked for, but it's not what we wanted. So we want you to change it. And IT says, it's not what you asked for and it'll cost more. And that's why IT gets a reputation for being hard to work with, when really it's a two-way street. If the business isn't being specific about what they want and they're changing their minds and they're not describing what they want properly, then they can't be surprised if the solution that they get isn't what they wanted.
Well, yeah. And if unclear requirements we're talking about here get delivered to IT and IT doesn't ask questions, smart questions, to try to ferret out the issues, right? Then IT can't say that they've done what they've done either. So it is a two-way street. It's a negotiation. It's a conversation. Both sides of the party are interested in discovering what is really needed by the business. So there are neither surprises on the business side or the IT side.
It always surprises me the things you guys, you and Paul and Alex come up with as questions for things that in my own head are perfectly logical or perfectly simple. Like, I want this and this to happen. And then it's, well, what in this case and in this case and in this case, do you want it to do this or this? Well, I don't know. I didn't think of any of those.
Mm-hmm.
But that reputation of it's not what you asked for and it will cost more and you can't have it and all that, that's why IT got a bad reputation. And you don't want that reputation with your boss or your peers or your customers. So whilst the idea of acceptance criteria, of knowing what the project needs or knowing what the assumptions are or knowing what the constraints are of the solution that you're being asked to deliver is a really good idea, it's not giving you a method of proving that your boss is stupid or stupid thinking or just, you know, wrong. If you try and prove your boss wrong, you won't have that boss for very long because he'll fire you. That's my experience.
Well, I just had a one-on-one. Folks, you know what one-on-ones are? I just had a one-on-one with one of my directs today, and we're talking just about that, about a question that came up recently on a call with a business user, and the individual said, I can't believe we didn't do it this way. You're right, Alex. We need to do this differently. It was stupid of us not to have done this earlier.
Right.
When in fact, the question was asked several months ago specifically. Right? It's, you know, it's...
And Alex is smart, so he didn't say, I asked you that.
Of course not. Of course, what do you say? Well, I asked you that, boss, and you said you didn't want it. Like, no, you can't do that. So I think people on the receiving, whether it be IT or whatever, like, you want to document these things as best as possible. But documentation is never like a go-to to assess blame for a problem, right? That's the wrong way to think about it.
Exactly. I always tell people that the job market is most liquid in January. So many people go back to work and think, that's it, new year, new job. What are you going to do if your direct makes that announcement on January 2nd? Certainly don't beg him or her to stay. Instead, crack open your copy of The Effective Hiring Manager and begin on page one. Mark takes you through from that gut-wrenching first conversation to the new hire working productively in our trademark step-by-step style. Be ready, stay ready. Get your copy now. So now we've covered, hopefully, the caveat, although we will come back to it later. Hopefully, we've shown you that it's a good idea, but one you need to be careful with. So now we'll talk about actually getting acceptance criteria when you get a work assignment. And the thing is about acceptance criteria or about caveats or assumptions or whatever, there's a lot of things you already know about pieces of work that you're already doing or work that you've done for your boss that you can apply to new pieces of work. So, for example, a common boss request is for a director to do some research on a topic. Like, I don't know, we're thinking about doing Agile, go find out about it. Now, if you think that was the question, think about your boss. Does she want something in writing or does she want to chat about your findings? Does she want something long and in-depth or short and high-level? Does she want something fast and dirty or slow and precise? Does she want you to include certain sources and or exclude others? Does she want something that covers the short-term future or for many years? If you think about work you've already had, you have a sense of some of those things already.
I'm glad you added this because I think a lot of folks, particularly new in their career, they think the way they think, right? And given if I were my boss, this is what I would want. And that is a wrong question to ask because there's a high probability that your boss is not like you. She wants something different than you may want in her situation. The idea is not to think about what would my boss want if she were me. That is not the question to ask. The better question is, based upon what I know about my boss, if you don't know anything about DISC, this might be a good time to go find out about it. But even if I don't know anything about DISC, what do I know about my boss and what has she wanted in the past? And deliver that.
Right. And not deliver. The other thing that we sometimes fall into is delivering what we want to deliver. I like to have a 20-page report that's really detailed. If your boss doesn't want it, you're wasting your time, even if you enjoy digging into all the details.
Oh, even worse, you may make the mistake of thinking, well, of course, if I give all the detail, then she can ferret out, she can go through it and figure out what she wants and what she doesn't want. And that's not the way they think. Somebody who does not want all the detail, they look at a 20-page report and they literally want to throw up.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't have the patience. And your boss is probably busy. Probably busier than you are, frankly. They're busy and they don't have time to go through a 20-page report, so they don't read it. Even if what they want is somewhere buried in that needle in that pile of hay you just gave the person.
Threw all over their desk. Yeah. So a lot of these questions you can answer from experience. If you think about previous work you've done for your boss, what's been the response? Have you done it right? And they've said, this is awesome, I love this. Or have they said, this is too long, or this is too much, or this isn't enough? Then you know some of those things already. So when you get a new assignment, think about the 2, 3, 4 things that you need to know in order to deliver it successfully. Think about what you already know, and then think about what are the 2 or 3 things that I'm still missing, and then ask questions about those things. But before you start asking that, Mike just said very smartly, consider your boss's DISC profile. So now we're going to talk about DISC profiles.
Okay, so we're going to talk about each of the 4 profiles, D, I, S, and C, right?
So DISC is a model for looking at people's behavior and then being able to draw some conclusions about things that they may or may not like, the way they think, the way they behave, and the way they like work done. We've got a million podcasts about DISC if you want to go to the website. So we're just going to talk about a high D boss first, because we always go in order.
And D stands for dominant, right?
Dominance. Dominant. Yeah. Right. So high D bosses are the really decisive ones. I'm D, that's why it goes first. No, it's not. It always goes first. D is, I'm going to take the hill and I'm taking no prisoners and just get out of my way.
Yeah. For Americans, you know, General Patton, for example.
Mm-hmm.
For you, Wendy, it'd probably be Margaret Thatcher, right?
Yes. Yeah. A high D boss does not want to answer questions. They want you to work out how to deliver the project and then deliver it. That I'm too busy to be working out how to tell you to do your job. And if I have to tell you how to do your job, you're not going to have your job for very long. So I want you to work out how to do it. That doesn't mean that you can't ask questions, but the questions you ask have to be short and they have to be on point. So, for example, Mark sometimes asks me to create a FedEx label for packages that he wants to send from his house. And my questions are light or heavy, fast or slow. That's it. Because Mark's DI, so mostly he's D when he's working. He just wants the label. And I need a little bit to know, you know, what to guess on the FedEx thing. I need to know where it's going, and I need to know roughly how heavy it is and how quickly he needs it to get somewhere. But he won't answer a whole bunch of questions. So I have narrowed it down to light or heavy, fast or slow. And, you know, it would be better if I had all the details, the label would be more accurate. But when FedEx come, they correct it all for you. If it doesn't weigh what you said it weighed, they correct it. If it won't go whatever service you picked, they call you and tell you you made a mistake. So the risk is low of me getting it wrong. So I get enough and deal with consequences if it isn't right. It's not ideal, but it's not necessary to be perfect in this case. Okay. So if you have a high D boss, yes, no questions are really helpful because they don't mind yes, no, because it's only one word. Or choose from this list of three sometimes works. It's better than open-ended questions. So do you want it to arrive today, Friday, or next Monday? Mark wanted me to order him a computer last week, and I said, do you want the Honda, the BMW, or the Ferrari? Like, because I could guess from there what spec to buy the computer.
And he got the...
He got the BMW.
The BMW, not the Ferrari, though. Okay, good. No. Good. No. Nice. I like that.
Yeah. So, for example, if you're, you can also list your assumptions. Instead of asking questions, you can just get them to confirm that your assumptions are right. So, for example, if your high D boss gives you a research assignment, instead of asking questions, you can say, I'll get that done. I'm assuming you want no more than a couple of pages, bullet points, and I should use Legal Software Daily as my primary reference. And that way, it's a yes-no question, or they are yes-no questions. It's actually three questions in one, to which they can just say yes. And it gives you the constraints without asking a bunch of detailed questions like Mike did at the beginning of this. Is it red? Is it blue? Is it green?
You know? Right.
It's a little trick to asking three questions in one, makes three questions one question and turns it into a simple yes or no, which really helps with high Ds.
And what if the high D doesn't answer your questions or doesn't give you the information you need? What do you do then?
So the good thing about high Ds is they're usually aware of the fact that they don't give people enough information. So you can make your best guess. And, you know, when they come back to you, if you give it to someone and they say, that wasn't what I wanted, I wanted this, but I didn't tell you that, then A, you know, they're usually okay about you getting it wrong as long as you've done it. And B, you can use that information for next time and get it right next time. So every time you do a piece of work, you're building up your ideas of what these acceptance criteria are for this particular person. And every time you do that, you have to ask less and less questions.
Yeah. And I think you said, Wendy, that they're comfortable with you making mistakes. Yes, my experience is that they are comfortable with you making mistakes, but they want you to make them quickly.
Yes, exactly.
We'll talk about high C's in a little bit, the detail-oriented, dot the I's, cross the T's type of person. Don't be that person. Take forever to deliver something, even though you don't have, quote-unquote, good requirements or acceptance criteria. Don't take forever and then deliver it with a bunch of mistakes. Like, do it quickly.
Yeah, if you can turn something around in an hour and it's like 50% there, high D is usually happy. If you take 5 days and it's 50% there, then they're not going to be happy. And the other thing is you will know when you've been successful with a high D boss because they'll say, yeah, go book it, whatever, or thanks. And that's all you'll get. Don't expect a whole bunch of effusiveness of, oh, you did such a great job. I love this spreadsheet. It's so clear with a high D boss. You won't get it. So just because you're not getting that doesn't mean you're not being successful. So if you are trying to analyze how you're doing in terms of work assignments and whether or not you're getting them right with a high D boss, remember, lower your expectations of feedback.
All right. So let's talk about a high. What's a high I first?
So high eyes are the happy-go-lucky ones. They're the people. They know everybody. They spend their days sending jokes because they want everyone to be happy. They go to Starbucks and have ridiculously long orders. And they're often in sales. Bill Clinton's a high eye. He's one of those people everybody always says, I was the only person in the room when I talked to him. And 5 years later, he remembered my name. Those are high eyes.
Yeah, so Going back a step, one way to think about this is DISC generally measures people on two dimensions, whether they're task-focused, getting something done, focused on the work, or people-focused. The other dimension is they're either assertive in nature or the reserved. So that kind of is a really high level, kind of the DISC, where DISC profiles stand. So a high D, which we talked about, is task-focused. They want to get the work done, and they're assertive. So they're assertive, task-focused people. The high I, on the other hand, is also assertive, but people-focused. So it's not as much task as people-focused. So assertive, people-focused. That's kind of the high I. And again, the way we're describing these, in some cases, they're kind of caricatures, and we're trying to be a little bit funny. So if you fall in these categories, I know, a high I, you're probably not a used car salesman, but the prototypical high I is the used car salesman. That's kind of outgoing, people, compliments, you know, fun to be around, etc. But a little swarmy, a little like uncomfortably being around. Now that's a caricature. That's kind of a high I. Okay, so we talked about high D, so let's continue with the topic on high I.
Okay, so high I's don't want to answer questions either, but for different reasons to a high D. A high D doesn't want to get into the details because it's going to slow them down, and a high D is all about speed. A high I doesn't want to answer questions because they just don't want to think at that level, at that detailed level. You know, when a high I reports revenue, 234,000 is
300,000. Right?
It rounds to 300,000.
Not 235. Not 250, but 300.
All the high C's are going, 234,000 is not anywhere near 300,000. No, you're right. But for a high I, it is. You don't want to give a high I a list where you're comparing costs, for example, where the cost difference is in tens of dollars. Because for a high I, that might as well not exist. So the short yes-no questions work again with high I's because they're willing to go that far. Choose from three works with them as well. I think of them as having fairly strong preferences, but I guess all of the profiles do, really. So that trick of like, do you want the Honda, the BMW, or the Ferrari? That will work with a high I, especially because they tend to like cars. And you'll know when you're getting it right with a high I boss, because they will be excited about what you gave them. Like, oh my God, that's the best thing ever, is a high I's favorite line. So you will get a lot of excitement around things where you've got it right. And you'll probably still get some positivity, even if you only got it 50% right. But look for the real excitement. That's how you know you're getting it right with a high I.
Yeah, I agree. I think also high I's tend to, the acceptance criteria of a high I will revolve, unlike high D's, it would revolve around things like people, for example. Mm-hmm. Like if let's say your boss is a director and reports to a VP, if one of the acceptance criteria would be, yeah, don't piss off the VP.
Right.
Like if the VP were somehow unhappy with the result, that would be terribly bad for high I. If one of his peers were affected negatively and created bad emotions, if you will, or let me say it differently, if it affected the relationship in any significant way, that would be really bad for high I. He or she would not want their relationships with their peers impacted by something you did. On the other hand, high D, if it pissed off the peer, probably, you know, most cases probably doesn't care a whole lot. Might be smart enough to care, but naturally wouldn't necessarily care. They would care if it didn't get on time or if it didn't get done within budget. Those things would drive. If it was, you know, $10 over, I'm exaggerating. If it was $10 over budget, they may not be happy. $10, $100, that's okay, right? But affect relationships, that would be bad. And it would be useful for you to know your boss, what gets them upset. Mm-hmm. Again, DISC is a mechanism, a framework for evaluating those kind of choices. Thanks, everyone. I hope you enjoyed that. And we'll continue with part two of this cast next week. In the meantime, have a great one, folks.